Hello and welcome to Wise Up. You're listening to the podcast that aims to break down barriers in the music industry by pairing upcoming young music executives with industry vets. I want to be prepared, so I seek the man upstairs for precaution, or if I really want to change the way I'm walking. That's metaphorical. For this one, we've got Sai Jagota and Patrick Ross. Sai is a close friend of mine and manages the artist Idris Miles, as well as running his own label, Duke Records. Patrick is the COO of Music Ally, an industry news service, and he's an expert on all things digital. Hope you guys enjoy this one. No problem with the way that I step, I got away with finesse, and the ladies say they love the way I got the game unlocked, and there's less harder working niggas than the days that I rest. Don't let that go over your head. I'm going to start with Sai this time. If you could tell us a bit about your journey so far, because it's been an interesting one, because you started originally in Dubai, right? Like you were in finance and then kind of transitioned into music.
Not technically. I graduated in economics from Bournemouth, and I was pretty much on the pipeline of just, you know, going into finance and, you know, continuing a career that way. But fortunately, we got hit with a pandemic and there was no real job opportunities. So I decided to message a friend on Twitter, but he wasn't really a friend. I didn't know him at all. I just liked what he was making. And we started engaging in conversations about how his music was doing and what could be done better. And essentially, he was this kid out of Houston who was getting maybe like 5 to 10 streams a song, which was not exactly great considering most of the streams are actually coming from himself. So, you know, we had a phone conversation and a couple months of back and forth, and I eventually became his manager. And so far, the goals for him was to just improve the product that he was making because, you know, the sound wise was a little bit messy. And also improved the way that he marketed himself, which he's doing a lot better now, thank God. We started Duke Records together as both co-founders. And the main premise was we know that major record labels don't tend to have like a brand identity. Well, major labels being the big three, they don't really follow any branding or anything like that at all. So we decided to kind of give ourselves a brand and kind of work that angle as how we want to appear to everyone. And that whole angle was we wanted to beat the odds essentially, and you know, just a couple of dreamers who want to make a career out of music. And you know, things are going well. We've started seeing more calls for the business and started moving into the next stage of what we want to do, which is great. Back in December, I got connected to another rapper out of East London called Idris Miles.
Amazing rapper.
Idris at the time.
Amazing.
Idris is very, very talented and, you know, very good at what he does. And at this time, I got told about Idris. I went to see what his music was like. And, you know, I bopped my head a little bit when I was listening to his songs. I was like, okay, he's cool. He's got potential. And then I messaged Idris and he actually sent me the like private SoundCloud link to his album, which was releasing in 2 days, which was called Miles, which released New Year's Day. And I was like, wow, this kid's, well, I say kid, he's like a year and a bit older than me, but he's special. He's got a lot of potential and he's definitely very talented. And yeah, like a couple of days passed and I went to see how his release went and he was doing pretty well. And you know, we had a couple back and forth and I also became his manager. And we've done quite a bit together off chasing the momentum that he'd already received off his first album, which included like getting him placements in several big publications and, you know, booking his first live, well, his first headline show as me as his manager and also getting him on SBTV. I do have my own goals for him now, which we're currently, you know, trying to see through. But that's my story so far in music.
I saw that performance on SBTV. It was wild. And my fiance digged it as well. And she's not super into hip hop, but he just has a way of rapping that kind of appeals to a lot of people. I think it resonates.
Yeah, he's definitely got a lot of commercial potential. And I think someone like Idris as well, he has a very, very fun and bubbly personality. And not a lot of people have got to experience it yet, but when they do, I'm sure he's going to be having so many more people just on him and, you know, trying to, you know, talk about him. And, you know, I could see him doing a lot of great things.
Cool. Thanks for sharing that, man. Patrick, over to you. I mean, tell us how you got to where you are. We want to know.
I mean, I feel like mine, just because of I think I'm the oldest person on here, it goes a little bit longer, but that's just down to time and space. I suppose the quickest version is I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia. Went to school for music business in Nashville, Tennessee. Moved over to the UK in 2007 to finish up my degree, and really didn't sort of like what was going on in the scene in Nashville at the time. And we had like Kings of Leon and things coming out of there, but it wasn't much business wise if you didn't want to work in country. Much more liked what was going on in the UK in 2007, and came over here. But at that time, we were, you know, pre-streaming era, iTunes was still new. Let's just say there were not a lot of jobs going. So I was interning at a little Canadian record label called Network as part of my university, and basically asked them for a job, and they said there aren't any going. Actually, a few of us are about to be let go. I was like, okay. And they taught me, some of the ladies there who were amazing, basically taught me what needed to happen, what somebody was looking for labeled for digital. And this was, I did a lot of MySpace pages. I was the only person in the office that knew HTML. And I kept sort of telling them I've got this business degree. And they're like, yeah, well, what can you do? And I was like, well, I understand, like, on a basic level, as I now know, publishing and revenue streams. And they're like, great, awesome, but what can you actually do? And that came out to be, well, I could make animated GIF banners, and I can customize a MySpace page, and I can book Facebook ads, which at that time only American accounts could do globally. So I got to it and started my own little, what I called, web presence management company, and was basically helping labels and artists look off after their social networks, which at the time, MySpace was dying, Facebook was rising, and it was, we were kind of moving into this different era. Flash forward, without taking too long on all this, I ended up getting a client that was a company called AWOL, who ended up doing a whole lot more. I started out as a freelancer with them, and eventually kind of went close to full time. I was their head of digital marketing, eventually would be the vice president of digital marketing for AWOL after they were bought by a company called Cobalt, but stuck around there for 10 years and then decided that was long enough for me, and moved over to where I find myself now, which is Music Ally. We do a lot of sort of advice and training. So we train all three major labels, lots of independents, lots of universities, artists, and basically teach them about the global music industry as it evolves today. Also manage an artist through Music Ally as well, the wonderful Ruben Donson. But yeah, now sort of, as you said, veteran earlier, I actually referred to myself as a veteran for the first time earlier this week to a buddy who him and I have survived for over a decade. And I was like, I think we're veterans now, man. And he was like, no, don't use that word. And I was like, but like, we're like veterans that just come off the battlefield, I have to say. And we're not out yet, but it's quite strange to hear that term tossed around about me. But I suppose, yeah, I've been doing it long enough that sort of works.
First of all, MySpace, what a throwback. I remember that.
I mean, I'm dating myself there. That said, those were some fun times.
Yeah, that's mad. And like, how do you find, because you were the senior VP of digital for Music Ally before COO, right?
Yes.
Like, how do you find the change, the difference?
Well, it's a change that's only been taking place the last few weeks, but it's been something, you know, after putting time in here and really getting to know the founders of the company and really helping to build a team here, it's an interesting opportunity that we looked at, and I'm very excited about it, of, you know, actually being able to look at how the company operates as a whole, because we're a publication, we do marketing services, we do our training that I've mentioned, we've also got managing one artist, do events, and actually pulling all of those things together and overseeing the operations is is it felt like the right move, the right thing to do. And as my our founder and co-founder basically put it, that this is usually something that you get someone from outside of a company to come in and do. But given our relationship, given the trust that we have, and where we've come in the past 3 years or so working together, that it just seemed right to do it internally, which is I'm very thankful to be at a place that there's a made that opportunity happen.
Well, congratulations in that case.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that you sort of started with AWOL as a client before moving into like full-time employment with them. And I think that's kind of like part of what I wanted to talk about with you both was like marketing yourself. So you obviously had to build up a reputation of being known as the digital guy, right? Like that's why AWOL hired you. And then that kind of, as they grew, you kind of grew and then became a part of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess from a veteran's perspective, looking back on it all now,
We're going to throw that term around now, aren't we?
yeah, I mean, hey, if I hadn't used it on email earlier this week, I'd have been uncomfortable. So thankfully, I warmed it up. But like I said, I went to school, got a degree like my parents told me I needed to do, and came out looking for a job. And like I said, there wasn't one, so I had to figure out what that was. And yeah, digital guy. And it was not anything I sort of set out to do, but I was building websites in my spare time, as a side hustle, nothing to do with music, nothing to do with my degree. And then I guess right place, right time, but there was, obviously an opportunity around that and sort of trying to actually figure out what the niche was that was needed. And like I said, there was some wonderful women at Network that kind of helped me of like, this is what we'd be looking for, which was invaluable to actually understand it from that perspective and then go, okay, this is what people are looking for. And to, actually develop that as a niche. As I said, it was web presence management. I never even used the term marketing. I was very never liked that term, but eventually realized that what I was doing was basically digital marketing. And sort of there is a lot to that of how you appear to the industry. I mean, the first job I ever had, I actually first client I got, the ad was for a digital whiz kid. So, and it's like, okay, I think I know what you're looking for, and it's trying to understand. I think a lot of times people come out, especially with a degree or some understanding of the music industry, but don't know where they want to fit. And it's really important to, again, I had help with this, but to understand what it looks like from the perspective of a big label or from a management company, because people want you to fit somewhere. They want to have a role for you. And that said, I was freelance for 5 years, I would say. So it was a while before I ever had a job or a title or anything like that. It was at that point I was making it up as I went along, and it kind of. But the more I interacted with the industry, I would figure out, and I would learn loads actually from working on projects and getting called into a meeting at like PS. And I'd never been to these meetings, and I'm suddenly learning what a product manager is, and that what the marketing person does, and the digital marketing person, and how the manager fits into that. And I was the digital guy. But actually looking at those structures to be like, okay, this is the part that I play in this wider team, the press person. And that understanding is I think just comes from experience and from hustle as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are in that position when they come out of uni. They might have done something music related or music business, and then they start looking for jobs and there's nothing. Like there's nothing there. It's you need like 5 years of experience to be an intern somewhere. And that's when it kind of like the people who make it through are the people who really like hustle and kind of knuckle down and start their own projects.
Which, I mean, Sai, it sounds like that's what you're in the middle of doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite a stressful ride. I mean, I graduated from university. Well, I finished my last exam May 2020, and I started working with Geo in Houston from about June, and I only got my first paid role in music 3 weeks ago. So a lot of it was freelancing for my artists, and I mean, for artists at those levels, they're not exactly money makers like that just yet. So I did do other freelance work here and there, but that was mainly designing people's press kit, as far as that really went, and just other roles, but they were nothing to do with music. It was all been about shooting people mass and other bits like that. I'm a bit of a numbers geek on the side, but yeah, I literally started my first paid role like maybe 3 weeks ago, and so far enjoying it.
Yeah, mega proud. That was
Very cool.
that was a good moment for me, like just because we've known each other since, I think, since you left the like the finance role and started going to music.
Yeah, I think we've known each other for a good 6 months.
But we've never
Oops,
met.
no,
We've
maybe a
never
bit
met in
longer.
person, which is
I mean, we're
just
meeting
wild.
tomorrow in person for the
First time, yeah. I'm very excited.
first time. Yeah, I tell you, Patrick, on the real, it's been a. I've tried to apply to so many places, even just, I offered to work for free for these places, and I even the closest I actually managed to get a role was another thing that AJ actually set up for me. He passed me a job notice for an intern at Fire Tower in LA, and I've been working there for about 6 weeks now, but I mean that's an internship which I'm doing for free at the minute. So yeah, it's been a mission trying to get these roles, but I'm just glad to finally have that and a bit more stability.
Well, I think that's something that I only became aware of throughout my history that, well, first of all, it's music. So there are so many people that want to do it and are willing to do it for free or whatever it is because it's sought after. But at the same time, I can really see how that, at the time I had my wife working a job at Starbucks, and I was my first internship that I held on to. I got my travel covered and £5 a day for lunch, which I was super happy about. I had my folks helping out to help cover the rent because I was still kind of in school, and I'm my wife working at Starbucks to pay the bills. And if I hadn't been able to do all of those things, if you can't, basically come in and be willing or able to do that, it's a big barrier to entry in this industry, which is in a lot of ways makes it very unhealthy.
Of course. I mean, I wake up every morning and I'm actually very happy to say this, but there's not been a morning so far in the last 3 weeks I've woke up and thought, wow, shit, I've got to go to work today. This is, it's going to suck. I haven't thought that. And, I wake up very happy knowing that. So, I mean, if you told me last year that I'm going to work the next year completely free, I'd probably tell myself I'm crazy and I don't know why I'm doing this, but I mean, I'm glad I've seen it through pretty much.
I mean, I hope as an industry where, at this point now, at least in this country, we need to pay interns, and I think that's actually a really important thing because there's a lot of days when a lot of companies were built off the backs of basically free labor, getting people in to do things for free because people are willing, but it I don't think creates a healthy industry. At all. Of course, we've all got to hustle, but at the same time, there's sometimes taking advantage of the good nature of people going, well, it's what I love and it's a passion, so I'll do it. But I see that as actually one of the things that really needs to be fixed around this industry, especially to give opportunities to people, because it's definitely not making things fair. And it does allow for a certain class of person to have a much, easier leg up into these kind of opportunities. If you can, I mean, how many people I knew that I worked with, the interns I worked with, that were someone's kid, dad or mom worked in some company and knew somebody at company. Some of the most horrible interns I've ever seen who didn't want to do any work. But these people could coast and be able to get it. And it's like, do they, they're really deserving of these opportunities. And I shift to that tone. I think that's something that we really need to address in this industry. Pay your workforce. It's great. Experience is wonderful, but also make sure that you're compensating people and thinking about people. I mean, we Music Ally have recently become a benefit corporation, meaning that we actually give back and we've actually set standards for how we treat our employees and how we treat our freelance staff or our interns, and that there's actually like fair compensation and that we're actually trying to do things to create opportunities. I mean, AJ, that's where we met, was through the Creative Entrepreneur Program, which was something that came out of that, of working with youth music and trying to go, okay, we do all of this, and sure, major universities and major labels can pay for it, but we had a big discussion of what can we do, you know, to actually to give back, to actually help the community, help the music and entertainment space. And it's like, well, short of just donating money to places, we actually can train people. So why don't we look at, and we were actually just having a call about what we're going to do next with that. All right, let's take what we can do and let's try to, you know, to create more opportunities. And I think that's really important.
That program, if I hadn't got that, I would probably have gone back to uni, because I'd been struggling to find like a role that I was really passionate about in the industry. And when I got this program, like, that changed everything. It kind of got me back my feet, gave me a lot of direction. So incredibly grateful.
Well, glad to see you're doing a podcast. And it was we all really enjoyed doing it, and we're figuring out what we're going to do next.
Yeah. And it's cool to see, like, kind of as an industry, there are a rise of these types of programs, and funding as well for, like, I think Youth Music did something with, it was called Next Gen. And it was like $2,500, you're just starting out, you might be an artist, producer, whatever, and just apply and see where it goes. But it's kind of like those kind of things are what are necessary to change that. It's not quite nepotism, but that kind of that barrier to entry. So I do find that encouraging.
It's a bit of nepotism, a bit of privilege. It's tied together. I mean, and, you know, Sai, we're working with a developing artist. I know, well, speaking to a manager friend that manages Run the Jewels, Amici Azigwe, and his sort of mantra is that as an artist manager, you need to sleep on the floor with your artist when they're sleeping on the floor, ride in the back of the van with them when they're riding in the back of the van. And I will say, I've only started managing an artist at this veteran stage of my career and have not slept on the floor with him, and, you know, been, you know, fortunate enough to actually be able to do this now. But it when you want your artist to be profitable, and obviously a manager only makes a cut of the artist, you know, I will say with working with my artist, we held off on doing as much invoicing as we could, because at the end of the day, it's like, buddy, the first thing we need to do is make sure that you're making money and that you're successful. And it's, you know, I think it's coming in as management, it can be extremely, you know, lucrative, but also it is coming in to actually see it from one of the most difficult angles. I'm sure you're seeing that, Sai. You've got to be an all-rounder.
That is definitely true. I mean, well, I can't tell you the amount of implications I've had with both my artists. I mean, but they're more on a personal level. But I definitely agree. I mean, I've held off on all invoicing. I mean, the first time the artist in Houston got a paycheck from United Masters, I mean, it was a small amount, but he got his check and he was very happy with it. And I told him, don't worry about my car, you can keep it. I told him I had plans of visiting him in Houston in the coming year. I said, when it comes to it, you can take me out for a nice lunch or get me a Subway, whatever. But it's something I definitely agree with, because you need, in this line of work, you do need to spend money in order to get yourself more eyes on you or more ears on you. We're now in a position where I'm doing artist service as a career line right now, and I'm seeing exactly how to do things. So how to submit press properly and how to get yourself in radio and how to, you know, optimize your digital presence and, you know, who to invest in and what to invest in and what's important to you as an artist. And it's got to the point where I've had to literally lay down flat where your money should be going when it comes to your next releases. And, you know, he's had his struggles here and there. And I told him that, okay, it's perfectly fine to, you know, not have the money ready. But I need you to understand that it's like your responsibility to form. And if it takes you an extra month to come up with it, then that's what it needs to be. If you need to do an extra job on the weekend in order to fund this, then, you know, that it needs to be that. And it's an interesting concept. Like, you do sleep on the like, managing an artist is kind of like having a child at the end of the day.
Yeah. And no, 100%.
I don't want to say that in a patronizing way, but if your kid doesn't eat, I mean, I doubt you as a parent are going to eat, if you get what I mean. That's the way I feel with my artists in particular. Like, I can't eat if they're not eating.
I mean, I've been told it's very healthy to make sure that you invoice them from day one. There's a lot of people that will say that. And I think we kept track of everything to make sure that when the first invoice did sort of come in, that it was accounting for everything. But, you know, I think, Sai, you being a numbers guy, as we've kind of said, I think that's going to be really, really helpful. What you just pointed out to you there as well, of like, there's, you know, something I think I didn't quite realize, but that managers don't necessarily invest. It's, you know, you work for the artist, and when they make money, obviously you get some, but there's something to that hustle. I mean, my artist has worked in a kindergarten, and we've been, you know, trying to make sure that he doesn't have to keep working in the kindergarten. But, you know, all of it, it's his money that's gone into to fund everything. And it, I think a lot of that struggle also makes it real. And it's, you know, it's making sure that there's, on one side, giving them a plan and helping them to understand their finances. And I think that's actually probably one of the biggest things where, as you've just seen from your first check from a distributor, and, you know, as from my side, being a veteran, I've worked at AWOL for 10 years. We were paying people out, but I was never really on much of the receiving end of that. And you actually look and you go, oh my God, this, wow, streaming. Okay, this is going to take a while before this is sustainable. But again, you're talking about track one, track two. Once you've got 10 of them, once you've got 15, okay, maybe we're starting to roll. But there's a big barrier to entry into this thing. And I think having that numbers focus, I mean, what else do you look at with your artist with like, you know, budgeting? How deep do you actually go into his personal finances, if I may ask?
Well, personal finances for the artists in Houston can be a bit of an issue from time to time. It's just based on more of his personal life, so I won't go too deep into it. But I have quite literally a document with how much he needs to put aside every month to go into his music, regardless of whether he's releasing it or not. So we consider it like a little bit of a almost like a phone contract without the phone type thing. So, you know, you put X amount every month, and, you know, when you're ready to release, we know how to use it. And, you know, whatever's left in the pot can be used for a bigger project at the end of the day. So, I mean, the things that really do cost at the minute are like the music videos, for example. I mean, we're paying out a couple hundred at the very minimum, and that's if you have a very cheap music video. That's rarely the case these days. But yeah, we had like a whole entire budget sheet, which basically depicts where his money will go to when it comes to it.
That sounds very sound.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. But I've got to the point now where, as a label, because technically the artist in Houston is also signed to the label. Now, I'm now in a fortunate enough position where I'm now receiving an income on a monthly basis. Now I want to start putting my own money on the side in order to catalyze what will be going on to his investment into himself. So now I'm just, you know, really trying to knuckle down on what I think is important. I mean, is the PR important to me anymore? Because I can now technically do that myself. Is the, you know, investing in streaming and playlisting important? Because now I have a team who work next door to my table who do all that work, and I've picked up on what they do and how they do it. Is the radio campaign worth it? Because, you know, I can now do that myself. So, I mean, there are instances where we can now save money as well as invest money.
That also becomes a question, because I've found myself in a similar position, but you don't want to spread yourself too thin. So exactly. Is it worth it for the artist, especially if you're not being paid for those services as a manager? You're making your 20% cut and that's fine. But if you're doing a playlist campaign, if you're doing PR for them, they would be spending that money elsewhere, but you probably wouldn't charge them. I'm assuming that's the case.
I do not charge them. I mean, like we already said, these artists are like family at the end of the day. I mean,
just, yeah,
I
wouldn't feel right.
I definitely wouldn't. And I've seen how much PR companies charge, from, you know, the smaller range ones to the mid-tier ones and to the higher end ones. I mean, PR is not a cheap service by any means, but I mean, at the end of the day, we want to see the best for our family members, our artists, or whatever you want to refer to them as. So, I mean, in that sense, I would just do it because of that.
Cool. We're coming up to time. Let's go through advice. because I think both of you have raised some like really valuable points, and yeah, it'd be good to hear the best advice you're given, and maybe advice for each other as well. So yeah, whoever wants to take the floor, it's yours.
I read a really good piece of advice in our Artist Manager Connect where me and AJ actually met. The advice was never want him more than your client. And I think that's great. Well, I mean, that's more for management, but I feel like that's great advice because for someone like me as well, I consider myself a little bit of a guy who does a lot of things from the marketing to the managing side. It's like you can take a horse to a river, but you can't force it to drink out of it. I mean, you'd just be wasting your time if that's the case. I found that advice quite helpful.
I like that analogy.
The best advice piece that's coming up for me, this is what comes to mind. I was trying to think of something more specific, but has to do with, I'll say, interpersonal conflicts, especially if you end up working at a larger organization. And one of my boss at AWOL for a while at Cobalt, Paul Hitchman, I was having a conflict with a manager, so somebody that was I was reporting to, and came in flustered to his office, and I was completely convinced that this person was wrong, that I was definitely right. I think we've all been there. And he looked at me and he goes, "If you're locked horns, unlock horns, like a antlers." And I was like, "Yeah, but our horns, but they are so wrong." And these are the points. It's like, I'm making all the points. It's like, if you're locked horns, unlock horns. And I think I kept going, but, and he said it several times until I kind of walked off in a fluster and I thought about it. But it's one that often we feel like we've got to prove our point, we've got to win in this situation, especially when we're conflicting with somebody. And actually, he'd learned this in his life, and it's the best advice I think I've got is sometimes just walk away from the fight. Okay, don't need a fight. And it wasn't, you know, necessarily backing down, just like, just get out of the argument, stop making this an argument. And I think my career would have gone a very different way. I mean, the person I was actually in an argument with ended up doing great things for me in the long run, but because I was actually able to go, actually, they were more experienced than I was. I could, you know, whatever the reasons were, actually having that conflict was, do I even remember what the conflict was over? It was probably an advertising asset, or whether it said out now or released or whatever it was, I don't remember. But that piece of advice stuck with me. And I think you could put that into life or any of the relationships that you get in within this business, that sometimes, yeah, feeling like you have to prove a point, unlock those horns and that you're now no longer locked.
Unlock those horns. I like that. It's also very like, it's kind of like you can remind yourself of that from time to time and remember to take your ego out of the equation and just kind of step back. There's a great book on this actually called Ego is the Enemy, which I recommend. Just general good advice in there, actually. And also The Obstacle is the Way by the same author.
I mean, there's this business has a lot of egos in it, and not just the artists, also us weird people that decide that we're going to work with artists as well. And I think that especially being a veteran, I'll speak from that standpoint, and spoke to someone yesterday who's still here, still going, and really good person. And it's like looking around us, how many people are still not here? And at some point, as somebody once said to me, careful. Here's some other advice. Careful who you're mean to on the way up, because you might meet them on the way down. And that same sort of thing of like thinking that you're going to go in there winning fights and having an ego. At some point, you may be humbled. We all get humbling moments, and people are going to remember who was kind, who was not egotistical, and who, yeah, didn't cause a lot of conflict and drama. And actually, that person, yeah, good person. And that's how opportunities come over time.
Be humble. That's for sure. We didn't actually swear as much as I was expecting. I don't think we did at all. I'm slightly disappointed.
Oh, thank God.
Just throw some in there now.
Shit balls.
Fuck.
Okay, cool. It was a pleasure, as always, Patrick and Si, and thank you for joining. Definitely grateful to have your time today.
Thank you for having us. It was a pleasure to meet you, Patrick, and yeah, I mean, I feel like I picked up a lot of mini gems here and there. I've actually written them down.
Nice one. Nice to meet you, Sai. And AJ, thank you for pulling this all together. And yeah, very much enjoyed.